Good morning. Good morning, you guys. I'm so glad you're here. And I do hope, I think we're going to have more that come in as we begin. But I want to welcome you to the Transitions class. So bless you. Thanks for your attendance. This is going to be a wonderful opportunity to learn from Ken. Can't wait to get into this body of work that he's got prepared for us. A few announcements, though, that I'd love to make before we begin. And that is, some of you, well, several had called maybe even this morning to say, now where are we meeting? So if you did not get an email and or a text letting everyone know where we were meeting and as a reminder of the class this morning, two things that I'll need you to do. If you thought that you had registered but you didn't receive an email or a text, would you please check with me. Let me know after class, hey, we did not get notification, because sometimes registering on your own is tricky, and if you don't hit that final little blue submit, it won't actually record your data, and therefore you didn't get the message. Or, like one of our members, Madonna, said it could be in spam or junk mail, that email reminder. So if you'll check those, because every week we do have this set to record weekly. So if you have to miss a class, you can always pick up your handouts. The following week, they'll be here for you, the last week's handouts. But we will send you, as soon as tech has it ready for us, a link to the audio for the last class. So you can just go in and push that button and listen to Ken's last message. And I don't want you to have to miss that. So we do want to make sure that you're connected and getting that information. And then the other thing that I want to remind you all are welcome to, this Sunday is going to be our legacy gathering at Fellowship at 10:30 in the Family Center, and it's going to be set up a little different. Of course, we're near Valentine's Day, so we've got a kind of a fun thing, not that it's Valentine-y, it just has red and hearts on it, but we've got a really fun mixer planned, and what we want to do, we're going to listen to a panel of different people from within Legacy that have just heard the call of the Lord and been motivated into different areas of ministry and want to have an opportunity to invite you guys to join, or if you're interested in any of those, you can find out information on that. And then we're going to look under the hood. We've got a survey that we'd like you to take so that as we continue in Legacy, that we're hitting the mark. You know, we always do health checkups. We have our cars maintained and checked on so that we avoid a problem in the future. And that's kind of what we want to do with Legacy, too, is go, are we hitting the mark? Are we where we need to be? And especially, what ideas do you guys have that you might want to see happen or be offered here? So I'd love to see you guys Sunday morning, 10:30 in the Family Center. And Ken, thank you again for doing this. You know, is there anybody here that would like to open us in prayer? I don't want to put anybody on the spot. If not, I'm just going to give it to Ken. I know he's closing us in prayer.
Okay.
But that's great.
Can you hear me? Am I plugged in?
I'm going to turn that back up.
You don't have to hear me to pray, because God hears us. So let's pray. Father, how grateful we are for this opportunity to gather and to contemplate life as you created us. As we go through the various aspects of this journey, I pray that you would be with me, that you would help me to recall and remember and to expound upon those things that are most significant for us as we seek to know how to age gracefully. So I pray that you'd be with each and every individual here today and those that are still looking for us. I pray that you'd guide them here. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so some of you I know from the class that I taught in the spring, last spring, on Pilgrim's Progress. That was kind of an attempt to sort of get us to think about life as a journey. I met Barbie a couple years ago on a trip, about the time we were overseas in Tanzania, and we were talking about a lot of different things. And I had gotten to a point where I was starting to ponder and reflect on growing older. I've got some experience working as a hospice chaplain. I've been in a hospital and hospice and traveled with people at the end of their lives and learned a great deal from them that we'll be talking about some of those in future classes. But So it got me to thinking about, okay, I'm not going to be here forever. I'm not in a hurry, but I know that I got more past than I have future. And so as a follower of Christ, what does that mean for me? And so I began a search on my own. And so that's what I'd like to share with you, some of the things over the next next few weeks about what I call transitions, just transitioning from one phase of our life's journey to another. So this first session I've titled, as you can see, The Journey of a Lifetime. And I was thinking about all of these bulletins you start to get when you hit 50, 55. You know, first thing you do is that AARP invitation to join them. And then you start getting Viking cruises and travel brochures and all these other things. And I can tell from the reaction that all of us have gotten those. Now, how many of you have actually gone on a trip? Okay, good, good. Maybe not Viking, but maybe another kind of trip. Or perhaps you plan a trip in the future. Okay. I live in a retirement community in Fayetteville called Butterfield Trail. And one of our neighbors told us that he had been planning a round-the-world trip. And I was thinking around the world in 80 days and Phineas Fogg and all. This guy sort of reminds me of Phineas Fogg, but he was gone for over the Christmas holidays, and his wife couldn't go because she had diminishments and ended up having to be in the long-term care facility, but she encouraged him to go. She says, you know, we've planned this all our lives. I want you to go. And so we saw him as he came back. He's worn out. I think he's just staying in his apartment until he recuperates. But the point was, as you prepare for a trip, you don't just go there without any preparation, right? You start thinking about it. I know in 2009, and you've got my thoughts right there in front of you. So if I read it to you, you're getting inside my head. 2009, I turned 60, and my wife and I had planned a European trip. We wanted to go to Europe and visit some of the countries there. So, but before I went, I began to research. I'd go to the library and get books on where I was going. I'd learn. I had some comprehension of what I wanted to see and where I wanted to go. I had a comprehension of some history and so on. But I didn't go there just ignorantly. I went there with some expectation of what was going to be there. And, you know, there's the, you know, you want to know things like, well, what should I pack? What's the weather like? What kind of money do they use? When I lived overseas, for example, in Asia, one of the things you learned about was you don't pat little kids on the head and say, you're a nice little boy or girl, because that's an offense. So you got to learn all those little things, you know? So I'm thinking to myself, I'm going on a journey. I'm on a journey, and I want to know. I mean, we all love to hear about what heaven's going to be like, but we don't like to talk about how we get there. We got to die to get there, okay? Or the Lord come back, whichever comes first. But I'm sort of, you know, I'm figuring he's going to come in death before he comes in glory. But I may be pleasantly surprised. But in the meantime, I'm going to prepare for death. Now, that sounds real morbid. But I can tell you, having had experienced it firsthand, and many of you have done it with your parents or siblings or children, so you know what it's like. It's not a comfortable thing, but it's a real thing. We're all travelers. We're all pilgrims on a journey. And all trips have a beginning, and they have a destination. You have a starting point. If you ever go to MapQuest, the first thing that you want to know is where you're planning a trip, where you're starting from. Now, many of us have, type A people, you hear this mindfulness, oh, it's not about the journey, it's about the destination. And so, you know, they say, just take it. No, they say it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And you're supposed to take the back roads, and you're supposed to, you know, instead of getting there in 2 days, in driving 14 hours a day to get there, people saying, well, just take a few days and see all the byways and visit that biggest ball of yarn in the world and the tallest potato chip or whatever, you know. And but that's not the way most of us do. Most of us are in a hurry to get there, but we're not necessarily in a hurry to get to the celestial city, which is, you know, Bunyan's password for heaven. And then in the beginning, you see here on the top, I got a quote from Hebrews, and I've abridged it. And I think it's worth relating to because Abraham obeyed by faith when he was called to go out to a place, and here's the key, that he was to receive as an inheritance, not knowing where he was going. That really is a lot of faith. How many of us would get in a car or get on a boat or a plane and not really have some sense of where we're going? But by faith, he went to live in a land of promise as in a foreign land, for he was looking forward to that city that has foundations whose designer and builder is God. Part of my purpose in transitions, and I got a little copy here of what Barbie put in, and I think I might have given this to her, but I'm here to guide us through the challenges of aging and help us embrace this season of life as a divine gift and an opportunity to grow closer to Christ. I hope that we can do that. That for me, that's what my studies and research and everything that I've gotten here that I'm sharing with you is my attempt to find that peace. Our destination is eternal. Like Christian, the character in Pilgrim's Progress, who was fleeing the city of destruction, heading for the celestial city, our life is a sequence of side roads. Oftentimes we get off the main road, but as we get older, it's a lot easier to stay on the main road because we don't have the energy to go off on a lot of the side roads, to be honest with you. But the route to our destination is through old age. And, huh?
Yay.
I'm sorry?
I said yay.
Yay! Yeah, thanks, Carl. I'm sorry. Yeah, old age. And it's a period that you know, life is described in the Bible as a mist or a smoke or a breath. And I think in Job, one time it talks about his life is like a weaver's shuttle. You know, it passes so quickly. And all we got to do is look at our grandkids as they grow in front of us, or look at somebody you hadn't seen in a while, and how did you get so big? When was the last time I saw you? Well, it was 8 years ago. 8 years? It seems like yesterday. I can tell from the nodding that we all have that experience. But you know, it's what's happened in this culture is rather than prepare ourselves, we tend to ignore it or pretend like it's not going to happen. You know, we can delay it, kick the can down the road or whatever. And so we cling to the past and here's they allow the pretenses of the present to rob us. When I talk about pretenses of the present, what I mean is that sometimes we're ashamed of our age and we try to cloak it, hide it, pretend that we're not as old as we are. Men particularly are fond of, you know, they try to walk straight even though their back is killing them or their knees are hurting. We don't want our wives or kids to know that we can't do that. Here, Dad, let me know I can do it. You know, and really I can't. But I resist. Or I won't tell the women's stories because there's more of you here today. I won't tell you about my wife, but you know what I'm talking about. It is, aging is something that we are afraid of and we resist. And part of the reason, and I'll talk about this, is because we live in a culture that doesn't value this stage of life. Aging is a time, and there's a book here that I've got a bunch of books here and I'll talk to you about it towards the end, but there's a book here that really is called The Gift of Years. And I know that there's several men that have told me that they're using this book as a like a small group guideline. There's 41 different essays that this lady writes about in terms of growing older and how she reflects on it in her 70s. and how she's looking back, and her attitude is much like the old woman that says, when I am old, I'll wear purple, and I'll eat ice cream anytime I want to. I may spit on the sidewalk. When I'm old, I don't have to pretend anymore. I can be me. That's what Joan Chittister talks about in Gift of Years. To age gracefully means, and part of what we'll talk about here is there's things that we want to gain as we grow older so that we age with peace, and we talk about some reconciliation. And I'll cover that here as I go through the various titles of the lectures. Denying our aging brings out the worst in us as we struggle to slow or reverse the effects of time on our bodies and minds and avoid the fate that awaits us. There'll be an opportunity to comment on these statements that I make, but I'm just saying aging is inevitable, that 100% certainty we're all going to grow old and eventually leave this world. The challenge is, how will this experience be for me and you and for those that are closest to us? And the old adage, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. We know what's going to happen. We don't have to pretend that it's not, and we don't have to be unprepared. It's like going and landing in Berlin and saying to your wife, hey, they speak German here. You know, like, that's a big surprise. All you had to do is consult the guidebook. So here's a question for each of us. Where are we going? Okay. Abraham wasn't sure where he was going, but he was looking forward to that city. And as I get into groups, and we've got a couple friends that get together and we talk, we share some of these books and these ideas, and it's interesting to see how quickly people just, I know what you're saying. We're leaving behind a world that we grew up in the past, 50s, 60s, maybe some of you earlier than that, I don't think so, but 50s, 60s, 70s, a world that, you know, why do we dwell on the good old days? Because we felt comfortable, we had more power, we had more energy, there was a lot more going on. And when we look forward, we don't see a continuation of that, but there's something that we long for. And that's what this area of what C.S. Lewis talked about, I think it's called Sehnsucht. I don't pronounce German, but I think Sehnsucht is this deep inner longing or yearning or desire for something. And I really never knew exactly. I had sensed this in my life before, even as a young man, but I never knew it had a psychological. Other people think that way. Often in churches, what I find is people, when they get together, they're longing for a community of brothers and sisters where they can be honest, open, and not have to pretend. And guess what? That's what heaven's supposed to be like as we read heaven. C.S. Lewis says it so well, and there's two quotes here I have, and I'm just going to read it so I can hear it myself, and you can read along, but if we find in, this is Lewis writing in Mere Question, if I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. I was made for another world. I think that's interesting to contemplate some of the things, and it's real easy to turn on the news and see the world going to hell in a handbasket, literally, and forget that we were made for another world. Not only that, but if we're following Christ, we already have our citizenship papers. We just are lingering here until the Lord calls us home or comes and gets us. In his sermon, The Weight of Glory, Lewis had meant much to say, but this particular statement I wanted to pull out. When speaking of this desire for our own far-off country, like Abraham's far-off country, the place he was going because God told him and he never saw it, but nevertheless he followed, When we're speaking of this desire for our own far-off country, we find it difficult to explain, because it is a desire for something that has never actually appeared in our own experience. They are only a scent of a flower we have not found, the echo of a tune we have not heard, news from a country that we've never visited. So, you see, I have a pause here for discussion. That doesn't mean you have to say anything, and that's sort of a cue for me. I'm just wondering, has anybody else ever had that sense that there's something else, but you haven't been able to put your finger on? Anybody care to share? I mean, I see a lot of people nodding, yeah. So my question is this yearning resonate with you? And then the next thing is, do you sense that you're going somewhere? Are you leaving something? Are you leaving? Or are you going? Makes a big difference on our attitude, doesn't it? Are we anticipating a far country that's greater? Do we have regrets and sadness over leaving something that we feel good about, firm about, even though we may not be functioning as well as we have? You don't have, yeah, John? Behind you, John, she's got a mic here, if you don't mind. Thank you.
Just looking at the news that I'm looking at the news about Ukraine, and then 11,000 deaths in that earthquake in Syria and Turkey makes me yearn for a better home.
Yeah.
Where there's no earthquakes, no tornadoes, no tsunamis, no more war. So you're right. Turning on the TV makes me yearn for heaven.
Yeah. Did you, everybody, just turning on the TV and just being faced with that makes us yearn for a better place, for heaven, where there, and there are things in the world. And the older we get, we have a better perspective than a lot of young people. We've seen these things ebb and flow, and particularly social unrest and some of the things that are very important to particularly the younger generation. But as older folks, we see that these things resolve them. But the problem is not inequity. The problem is not economics. The problem is not education. The problem is sin. The problem is sin, and God has already made a provision for that through Jesus Christ. But it's so easy for us to be distracted. And that's the thing, that we as elders can see these things because we have a longer perspective. We can see these things come and go. Politics have never solved the problems of humanity, because the problems are in the heart. Until every person is transformed and kneels before the name of Christ, we will not have heaven. That's why we're, world's not my home. I'm just passing through. Well, just think about these things, okay? We don't have to, this lecture doesn't depend on the discussions, because I can talk until my voice goes out. I'm just hoping to plant enough things in your head that you can begin to think about that over the weeks ahead, that you'll be more encouraged to share some of the things that maybe these comments jog. Over the next 8 weeks, we're going to be looking at this journey as we consider the cause and effects of old age. I'm going to get into some real boring, and of course we have a physician, a lot of people here that probably know a lot more about this that I'm going to share with you, but about the biological things that go on in our bodies. My goal is to help us see the season of life as a gift, just as I mentioned earlier. And more importantly, is to become more dependent and created or recreated in the image of Christ. I use this example in the legacy about a balloon. Our life is a balloon, okay? I'm in a gondola, and there's this balloon, and the balloon, the balloon is my spirit. Let's see if I can get this thing hooked on my ear again. Okay. Oh, wow. I'm going to just hold it for a second, okay? I don't know how to do this. It's going to be hard because I talk with my hand. So, okay, can you wire me up here, girl? I can take my hearing aid out. Got hearing aid, bifocals, and I'm really equipped. Teach a class on aging, huh? So think about this. Your spirit is what lifts us, okay? And what weighs us down is all the little sandbags around our gondola. And as we get older, there's a lot of things we have to let go of. You know, I can't do that anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. And thank goodness I don't have to do this anymore. And so slowly, you're lightening your load. And you're starting to lift into an area that perhaps we don't know what to... If you don't know what to expect, it'd be like going on a trip again if you didn't have some sense of where you're going. Getting a plane. Can you imagine getting in a plane, next in A, and not knowing where you're going? And all of a sudden, you look down there and it says... That looks like Ukraine. How did I get that ticket, you know? I don't want to go there. This is somebody supposed to be here calling me to tell me, what time is it? Yeah, read your thing, okay. I'll tell him later. He was not here. I want to read you something and see if this resonates. This is a journal entry that I wrote when I started thinking about this whole thing. I was trying to figure out, I had to write an academic paper. And so I said, gee whiz, I've been spending a lot of time reading and talking about this. Why don't I just put it down and see if I can put it in the form of some kind of a paper. So I wrote this as an introduction. I'm not exactly sure when it happened, but I began to notice it in my early 40s when I found it hard to do work on my computer at the office. Looking down to read and up to type was creating chaos in my mind. Since I'd already been wearing glasses anyway, the new prescription with a progressive lens has corrected the problem without too many noticing. I don't know, maybe it was when I noticed that all the hair in my legs and armpits had fallen out. While the hair in my nose and eyebrows competed to see which one would cover my face first. Of course, there were the wrinkles and the gray hair, but these changed so gradually I hardly noticed. Like the leaves on the maple trees down my drive changing from green to orange so slowly that you don't notice a transformation until the leaves begin to fall. And then you know you're officially entered another season. All of these little physical changes have been trying to tell me that something was happening, but I still failed to understand until one day I realized that I'd entered another phase of my life. I'd become old and honestly didn't recognize it. This epiphany puzzled me. I knew I had many birthdays I'd experienced. I knew I couldn't do many of the things I used to, but that didn't really trouble me because most of those things weren't as fun as they were made out to be, or at least for me. How is it that a person could enter into a stage of life called old age and not realize it? If these things could sneak up on me, what other surprises lurked in the future? And so I set out on a quest, not for the fountain of youth or the Holy Grail, but for guidance and wisdom of others who have or are currently walking the same journey. And so that was kind of the introduction to my studies and some of the things that I'm going to share with you guys. And I'm sure there are things here that I'm missing, things that you can add to it. So, Waking Up Old was the title that I had given my paper originally. And then I thought, well, that's not very academic. So I put transitions, you know. Waking up old is true. I woke up one day and I realized, and if there weren't any mirrors in the house, I probably would have not known as soon as I have. But I'm growing older, and honestly, I'm not. I'm coming to grips with it. I'm not completely there yet. So I'm not saying that. I'm just bring it on. Give me the walker. I'm ready. No, I. But I what I want to do is I want to. I want to understand. In living in a retirement community, I'm surrounded. I'm one of the younger people in the community. And so I've got a lot of older friends. And just in the 2 years I've been there, I've already begun to see them going from unsteadiness to walkers to scooters to, and most of them, honestly, are willing to talk about it because they've seen it happen in their neighbors, and so we support one another. And then, and part of what I see, and I'm getting off script here, but I told Barbie I didn't know how long I'd talk. Probably not as long as. Is not as long as I could. I forget where I was going. I just had a senior. So anyhow, I think that it's a gradual thing that happens, but it shouldn't surprise any of us. It really shouldn't. And I think being prepared for it and helping each other along the way is really what I want to try to help us. I was going to say that a lot of churches, and we'll talk about this more in the future, but a lot of churches, and I would include fellowship as one of those, okay? So this is not a critique, but it's an observation, is we focus so much on children, young married, young professionals, because principally the leadership are young people. They have not passed our way yet. And so they really have no idea. They know what it's like to be a child. They know what it's like to be a young teenager and a high school person. They know what it's like to be a young married and even a young professional. But as they enter into this, they're butting up against a culture that says, don't get old. Don't get old. Whatever you do, don't get old. And so what they do is they tend to marginalize. And this is part of what my friend here talks about in the Oxford Book of Aging. Thomas Cole wrote a cultural history of aging in America. And to be honest with you, most of these I told Barbie, I realized afterwards that I'd only read the portions of these books that fit my particular research. And so I really am looking forward to going back and reading it in its entirety. But the things that I gleaned from Thomas Cole, who is not just a historian, but he's a gerontologist, a person who studies aging. And he said that growing older in the West is a season in search of its purpose. And any of you who have traveled overseas, particularly in Asia, Africa, Latin America, you see that the family unit is entirely different, and the elderly people are held in high regard. And here, it's different, and we'll get into that over the weeks to come. And really, this whole idea about aging changed a lot after the 16th century, Age of Reason, and then getting, particularly post-World War II, where we had the industrialization of the West, and work, careers, affluence, and so on. And he talks about a paradigm shift, and I'm just going to read it. It's a quote. Old age was removed from its place as a way station along life's spiritual journey and redefined as a problem to be solved by science and medicine. Today, topics of old age and death are avoided. Adjectives used to describe the aging experience, worn out, useless, old codger, obsolete, you name it. I mean, we see it all the time on TV. There's, some kind of a, and how many jokes? I mean, we can laugh about it because we're old, but I don't like young people telling jokes about me. I'd rather have one of you all tell a joke about it, because I can say, yeah, I know what you mean. But I don't want my grandkids talking about, oh, Papa, you can't do that. You want to bet? Get that basketball out. I'll beat your butt right now. But this is the kind of reaction the world we live in. Ironically, here's the thing. Ironically, the aversion to aging is occurring at the same time when our population is increasing and the birth rate's decreasing. It used to be a pyramid, a demographic pyramid, and if you look at places like Central America or Mexico, they've got a lot more younger people than they have older people. You look at places like Japan, and it's a rectangle. Older people live longer, so they have as many older people and as they do younger people. Now you look at a society or a subculture. You look at the United States, and we've got a lot of people living together, not getting married, not even children are not valued. They'd rather have a special hybrid dog or than have a child. And if they do have a child, they don't really want to take care of it. So I mean, there's a whole host of family-based societal type of things. That's the guy that called. Interrupted me right in the middle of lecture. Come on, old man, sit in here. It's all right, I'll fill you in later. Yeah. So we got decreased birth rates, increased life expectancy, and we've got, I think in 2030, they said that, the largest growing segment of the population is 85 and above. Now, percentage-wise, not numbers, but the percentage-wise of the population, that segment, and so some of you have made it into the top of your class. And yet, even with that, staring it in their face, that aging is happening, you wouldn't know it by looking at TV or the advertising or even in our churches. You'd think that we were the minority in. And yet, there's more of us than there are them. Now, fashions, advertising, and cosmetics all make you feel worse than you really are. I mean, we can look in the mirror. We know what's happening. And if you ignore it too long, your spouse or your friends will tell you that you're in denial. But there's a lot of us like that. And it doesn't mean that it's not a bad thing. It just means that we live in a world right now that is trying desperately to avoid the fact that human beings age. I guess it's not new. You think about Ponce de Leon and the search for the Fountain of Youth or the Holy Grail or whatever. There's always been people want to live forever. But perhaps the key to that is they want to live forever because they think living forever, but it's that the flower they've never, flower they've never smelled, but they can, have a fragrance of it, or the tune they've never heard, but they have a melody. They want something, and they think it's eternal life here on earth, but really what it is God's creatures, it's Him beckoning us back to Eden. When you think about it, that's what heaven's going to be like. It's going to be like it was in the beginning. So the question is, a season in search of its purpose. Are you searching for a purpose as you grow older? Do you look back on your life and ask yourself, did I matter? What did I accomplish? Why did, people often will take, they'll do a kind of a memoirs. It's real important, and we'll talk about that in one of the later lectures, about how important it is to reflect and reminisce, because it's in the memories of the past. Two things happen. We can remember our future. Now that sounds kind of silly, but from a redemptive standpoint, when you reflect in the past of what God has done and how God has walked with you up to this point in life, you can be pretty doggone sure by faith that He's going to continue on in the same way. That's remembering your future as a child of God. The other thing is it's a gateway to reconciliation. Because by remembering your past, you get a sense of purpose, but you also find areas of conflict in your past that you still have time at this stage of our lives to make amends and to reconcile. And that makes growing older much more peaceful. As you're down to a point where you can't get out of bed and you are just waiting for the angels to come and take you away, And that does, sounds macabre, but I want, I hope by the time we're done here, that that's something, like my dear friend Carolyn Knight said one time, I'm not afraid. I am excited because I get to see what Jesus really looks like. That's what I want to be like when my time comes, and that's what I hope to share with you all. So think about what your sense, what your purpose is that you're searching for here in the next week or two. Let's go on to the next section, worldviews and conflict. And I think you all know what a worldview is. It's the way, the lens in which we see the world around us. And there's two, there's lots of different classes you can take on worldviews. But essentially, we're up against one called a biblical worldview, in which we view the world, its history, its future, its creation, everything we view through the lens of God's revealed word. That's a biblical worldview. On the other hand, there's a secular worldview, putting man at the center. Biblical worldview puts God as the center. We'll talk more about that. In fact, I think my next lecture is on, let's see, getting ahead of myself here, Barbie. Yeah, a glimpse of old age, yeah, and that where we're going to talk about a worldly glimpse of old age. We're going to talk about how the world sees aging. Secular humanism looks at aging and death as natural. It's an evolutionary conclusion of a person's life because it looks at our worth is determined by our contributions to society as a whole. And a contribution can be academic achievements, it can be building things, it can be our children. But when a person, in most, when I say secular humanist, that would include atheistic people or agnostics or people who are would call themselves a materialist. I had a brother-in-law like that. Very nice, very good man. Okay, I'm not saying that they can't be good people. He was a good man. He did good things for people in private. He was very charitable. But when we talked about dying, he said, when the brain ceases, I cease, and my body's turned back to compost. That's all there is. And he said it. He wasn't desperate. I couldn't imagine it, but in his mind, that was it. So it's a natural conclusion to every evolutionary cycle. How many of you are familiar with the Humanist Manifesto? Okay. I'm going to read you some excerpts in a couple, maybe next week. I can't remember where I got it slated, but Humanist Manifesto was first written, I think, in 33 and then in 72, and then there's been an upgrade since then. But some of the stuff that they write is amazing. When you read it in context of today, you say, those guys planned on what's happening today. They planned on that almost 100 years ago. Now it's coming to fruition. But one of the things they say about, it says, humanism considers the complete realization of the human personality to be the end of man's life and seeks its development and fulfillment in the here and now. Some of you may have heard of Abraham Maslow and the hierarchy of needs. We've heard a lot about being self-actualized as being the highest achievement of human development. It's interesting, and we will talk about some of the psychological theories of human development, but there is this idea where you become self-actualized now contrast that with being crucified with Christ. Bible says, I've been crucified with Christ. I no longer live, but he lives in me. And the good that I do is him doing it. The world says, be self-actualized, and you'll find the greatest achievement. So the worldviews are in conflict. Yes, ma'am?
So can you define that?
Self-actualized. It's been a while since I've studied this, but from what I understand, it's you get to a point, there's the needs, and there's basic needs of being connected, safety, security, food, sexuality, and it gets up to a point, self-actualizes, where you're independent, and you don't, perhaps you don't even need community. It's, you are the pinnacle in your way of seeing things, And I think, to me, it sounds very narcissistic, okay, where self-actualizes, I don't need anybody else. I got it all figured out. And I will do what I want to do. And in some ways, that's admirable to see people that march to a different beat. Yes, ma'am.
So, to me, it sounds, so human worth is determined by their contributions to society. To me, that is contradictory to self-actualization.
Well,
no, because this, you're giving what you give to your society for it to be better, but this is what you can do for yourself to make yourself.
I can see the conflict, yeah. I haven't thought about it, to be honest with you.
But it's about, may I?
It's man-centered, yeah.
Yeah, because I used to teach that, Maslow. And it's really about self.
Yeah.
Versus the cheap end of man, which is glorified by God. It's about God. So your worth is from works.
Can everybody hear that conversation? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, your contribution is your achievements. Well, that's right. But the self-actualization is you get to a point where you are feeling like you've become all that you were supposed to be. Okay. Now that you could be self-actualized and still be spiritual. I'm not saying that, but self-actualization is that point where you are the center.
Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Perfect,
thank you.
Everything that
she
does has a
consequence.
Okay.
I think they claim that there are very few people who reach self-actualization. Jesus, Gandhi, people like that reach self-actualization. Most people don't ever reach self-actualization.
Okay. So here's someone who knows more about it than I do. So, but you get a sense, you can still be a good and righteous person, but you don't do it. Self-actualize, I think, means that no. Can you imagine not making a decision based on what you think other people think? Now that. That would be comforting for me. I mean, because oftentimes I've been doing reading on humility because that's one of the fruits of the Spirit. It's not a fruit of Spirit, but it underlines all of it that I struggle with personally. And so one of the things, the best thing I found was that humility is really self-forgetting, is having no sense of yourself. And perhaps self-actualization in its truest sense is not so much that it's all about me, is that I don't need it to be about it. I'm just me. So I'm sorry if that's not my area of expertise. I probably shouldn't have used that area. But Delary, how does that fit in with a worldview then, secular worldview? Can you have a biblical worldview and be self-actualized?
I think you can. Jesus.
Okay.
And but few of us ever get there.
What are the things he's saying? Few ever get there. What are the detriments to self-actualization? What would keep us?
A lot of people might see you as narcissistic or something of that kind.
Uh huh.
That you don't care.